All right, everybody. Welcome to the show this morning. We're pleased to have Morley Robbins on the show again. First of the year, first Monday. Morley's always coming up with so many new interesting articles and supportive research data, to me, totally supporting the four pillars. So I'm always quite interested. And so we may try to do this regularly, Morley, every first Monday, bring the scientific evidence to support the philosophy and the truth for so many people that need that. I always go back to my wife, Jamie. She doesn't actually listen to the show. I probably shouldn't tell people that, but she doesn't need any of the science. She doesn't need any of the proof. She just knows.
That's great.
There's the way to live and be and do. But there's those of us who, like doctors, kind of need some of the proof. So anyways, first Mondays with Morley will bring some of that. But in preparation for this first show of the year, Morley, really what I did was go back and review the other, I think it's 14 or 15 shows. I listened to all of them.
Wow.
Because I wanted to summarize them. And I'm not going to summarize each and every show because that would waste all of our time today. But my overarching thought and understanding as I went back to the very first and all the way through, it's still the same base. It's the Occam's razor that we've talked about before on the show. Mm-hmm. All things being equal, the most simplest explanation is probably the correct one. It's great to be able to bring the literature in and prove how the TPO enzyme, which is the enzyme that converts your inactive to active thyroid, is copper dependent, and to prove how cholesterol being converted into vitamin D is a magnesium dependent enzyme, and to prove how the osteoblast, which are the cells that build our bone, that is an enzyme that is dependent upon magnesium to build our bone, for the enzyme to build our bone. The osteoclast, which chew up the bone, is that enzyme to chew up old bone, which we do need to do, but it needs to be in balance with the builder. The one that chews it up, that's activated by iron. when it comes to heart disease, you can go in there and prove how lipid peroxidation, the oxidation of these lipids, occurs by hydrogen peroxide, and too much glucose in our diet, too much iron, too much supplemental vitamin D all stimulate this hydrogen peroxide production, which oxidizes the lipid membranes and can lead to some heart disease. We talked about Parkinson's, how iron has to be in constant motion. It has to be that square dancer that's constantly moving, and stagnant iron drives oxidative stress. And when you have stagnant iron in the substantia nigra of the brain, that can stimulate oxidized dopamine. That means the dopamine doesn't work right, and you get symptoms. We call it Parkinson's. So just going through piece by piece by piece, disease by disease, I put those in quotation marks, and making the mineral connection was really cool to do over the past year and a half or so. And I encourage patients or listeners to go back and listen to that if they want more of those details. But it all boils down to this same thing that we've said probably 100 times. It's the cell's got to make energy, and it's got to clear exhaust. Bottom line, yep. That's it. Mm-hmm. And that process is dependent upon some key minerals to make that energy. Oxygen, really, when we're talking about making energy, you're taking oxygen from what we breathe. We're going to combine it with some fuel that we ate, glucose or fat. And we're going to run it through the mitochondria, and out the other side spits our energy, our ATP, which is attached to magnesium. That's the energy. And then coming out the tailpipe is the free radicals. That's the exhaust. So oxygen is delivered to the cell to make that energy by iron. But iron's just the delivery man. Copper has to open the door, let the oxygen come in, and then work with that oxygen to activate it, to actually turn it into water and energy. So iron's important to delivery, but copper's important to activate the oxygen to actually make the energy. Copper's important to deal with the exhaust coming out your tailpipe, to deal with the free radicals. We've got to have copper. These antioxidant enzymes that are shut down by iron and activated by copper and magnesium deal with all the free radical exhaust, all the damaging oxidative free radicals. So it really does boil down to this, these basic things. You know, the very first show we did, we kind of focused on magnesium because that was what you were known for as a magnesium man. And that's kind of what you started you on this whole journey, was looking at magnesium. And we learned about 3,751 different enzymes in the body that have to have magnesium to function. That's about 42% of the enzymes in the body. The enzymes are the workers. The enzymes are what make our body function. We talk about cholesterol converting to vitamin D. Well, it's an enzyme that's actually doing the physical work. You've got to clip a molecule off of this and add a molecule here, and you're physically, structurally pruning or building, subtracting and adding things at the molecular level. Well, it is enzymes that do this work, not just for cholesterol to vitamin D, but for every process in the body. Enzymes are the workers. The magnesiums are the spark plugs, are the keys that turn on these workers. Magnesium's a big one, but all the minerals play a role. Stress depletes magnesium. Chronic stress, we learned about, stimulates methylothionine in the liver, and that binds up your copper. Well, we just said copper was needed to make the energy and clear the exhaust. So it really was just reaffirming to me, going through all those podcasts, to understand that chronic stress, low-fat diet, demineralized soil and food, it's this perfect storm. Excess iron added to our food since the 1940s, this perfect storm of we're hamstringing our body's ability. We're handicapping ourselves, our body's ability to make energy and clear exhaust. I mean, the last show, I think it was the acetaminophen that blocks glutathione peroxidase. Anytime you hear ACE at the end of a word, that's an enzyme. That's code word for enzyme. Glutathione peroxidase is the enzyme that recycles your glutathione, and glutathione is one of your primary antioxidants, the fireman that puts out the fire. And acetaminophen prevents that enzyme, glutathione peroxidase, from working. So therefore, you don't have as much antioxidant capacity. You can't deal with the exhaust. So that's it in a nutshell. Make energy, clear exhaust. Magnesium and copper help to make the energy. Excess iron prevents you from making as much energy. Copper and mag are needed to clear exhaust. Excess iron impedes your ability to clear the exhaust. That's it in a nutshell. All the other factors in our world, from EMF to blue light to toxins in the vaccines to you name the heavy metals and all the different things, these all damage us too. But in a body that is not equipped to make energy efficiently and clear exhaust efficiently, all these other toxins and burdens and challenges in our world, those are like the straws that break the camel's back. Let's make the camel's back a little stronger. Let's make our mitochondria stronger. Let's make our cells more resilient, our body more resilient, by nourishing it properly, supplementing where nourishment is lacking, and avoid the things that we know will damage us. But most importantly, let's bolster the body's ability to make energy and clear exhaust. So I think that was less than 10 minutes. In a nutshell, I summarized a year and a half worth of interviews maybe there. And I'm sure you have some comments there, which I'm eager to hear, but also want the listeners to know that our goal, my goal, hopefully Morley's up for this, we'll do First Mondays with Morley to really focus on kind of the new, anything he's learned in the past 30 days in the literature, to just reinforce the concept, because the Occam's razor idea is kind of hard for intelligent type A high IQ people to accept that it really could be this simple. So I think that'll be one of our ongoing themes this for 2019. We'll just be reinforcing and connecting the dots in the literature of why it does boil down to these basic things. So Morley, welcome to 2019. Thank you for joining us today on the first Monday of January. And any comments there to that first barrage?
Well, first of all, Happy New Year. And that was probably one of the best 10 minutes of boiling down what's really going on I've ever heard. So I really commend you for that. That was, you've obviously spent way too much time listening to those conversations, but you clearly have summarized in a very succinct way what not only what we've talked about, but you've boiled it down to its essence. And I think you're right. To the people who are drawn to this work tend to be high IQ. And people with high IQ have two genetic defects. We love or control freaks, and we love complexity. And when does stress begin for someone with high IQ? When they feel out of control because their body doesn't have the minerals that they didn't know about, and they're looking for complicated solutions for why their body is not working right. And it really, it's disarming to realize that it's this simple. And I think that there are many people who are just almost immobilized by it, but when they start to focus on it, as I know you have and your patients, it is life-changing, which is very, very exciting. But it's getting the masses to realize that there is an alternative explanation for what's going on. And it's a lot simpler than people realize. I think that's probably one of the most important messages for people to begin to embrace that.
Right. Well, and just to reinforce that simplicity of, number one, if you can't do that, or you're having trouble doing that, or you're being delayed in doing that, then you're left with either you're going to suffer from these symptoms of oxidative stress, suffer from the symptoms that come from the inability to make energy and clear exhaust, or you go treat those symptoms with a pharmaceutical to artificially lower blood pressure, lower blood sugar, get your migraine headache to subside, or whatever it is. Or you can use integrative techniques to do that. There's lots of different IVs and supplements and different technologies in the integrative realm to deal with those symptoms. And I'm not saying to not do that. We know long-term that's not the best way. How can I say that? Because we have a 70-year experiment going here in America with health outcomes that have gotten worse and worse and worse every year. And now we're in dead last in America compared to other industrialized countries. We get the worst health outcomes by treating the symptom only. So if you need to treat a symptom for a few days or a week or a month or two or whatever, fine, but let the basic foundational stuff come into your life also and start working on that. So you're not just stuck in the realm of treating a symptom and therefore going to be stuck with a poor health outcome. Healthiest people in the world pre-World War II, now we're the sickest. So just understand that's a choice. Now that you're getting educated, you can make that choice. Second comment, I was talking to a cattleman last week. I'm always talking to these cow guys, I guess, because I live in cotton and cow country. But he made this comment to me. He said, all the cowmen out here in West Texas understand you can move calves east to west, but you can't move them west to east, meaning stalker calves. So these baby calves that have been weaned, they're old enough to wean off their mama, and now you just need to feed them and grow them before you butcher them. So you can buy a bunch of these young cows from back east, Mississippi or wherever, and you can move them to Texas or Oklahoma. And you'll have to doctor them some. They'll have some sort of illness or transitional stress that causes illness, and you have to doctor them some. But at least they'll survive and end up growing and doing okay. But you can't do the opposite for some reason. You can't move them west to east.
Wow.
But the interesting thing he told me was he had a gentleman who was supplementing his cows with a particular mineral blend. And this gentleman did an experiment. Half the herd, I think he had 3,000 cows. So half he gave this specific mineral blend. The other half he just used his traditional feeding techniques. In the half that remineralized appropriately, he didn't have to doctor those calves hardly at all, if any, and sure didn't lose any. In the half where he didn't do that, they were sicker than dogs, and they lost some of them, and they were doctoring them all day long with tons of antibiotic. Just that basic thing of proper mineralization in a cow, and I know it's a cow, but it does translate to our physiology too. And historically, when you look at Weston A. Price, it's the same thing. What did he mainly see? The nutrition in our ancestors in these 14 different people groups around the globe that he studied, they had minerals and fat-soluble vitamins from animals, basically, which would be the retinol we always talk about. And they were healthy. They didn't have heart disease, cancer, and bad cavities, and all the other things. That basic of a concept, it is true. So, anyways, just wanted to reinforce that. I'm sorry I cut you off there.
No, that's great. That's wonderful. And I think, again, so many people are no longer connected to a farm. And they don't realize how critical the minerals are in the soil, not just to produce plants, but to produce healthy animals. And it's just, you know, it's something that, again, I'm a city boy. I mean, I grew up in Baltimore. It was my great grandfather who was the last farmer in the family. And, you know, you're in a different part of the country. You're much closer to it. But now, later in my life, I'm living in a part of Louisiana where there are a lot of farmers, and they're really focused on these minerals for their plants and animals. But if they get an ache and a pain, they run to the doctor, not realizing that it's the exact same minerals that they need in their body that they're focusing on in their fields mm-hmm. and in their stock. Yep. And it's we've been divorced from that very simple concept. And what people have completely lost sight of is that these minerals are the spark plugs, as you said, they're the spark plugs to get the enzymes to work. And, right. you know, we can't drive trucks and cars without our keys. Why do we think we can drive enzymes? Yep. And so I'm pulling together a presentation that I'll be doing in March for 200 physicians out in Seattle. And one of the points I'm going to make to them is that, and I cut my teeth on business. I went to business school and I was a consultant, a management consultant for 20 years. And in that world, nothing happens until a sale is made. That's the basic transaction to get business to work. You gotta have a sale. Well, in biology and in physiology, I think the parallel issue is nothing happens in the body until an enzyme is activated. And I think it's important for people to realize how primal that process is. And there are literally bazillions of enzyme reactions that allow us to exist. And the way they are classified is they're called reduction and oxidation. Those enzymes that are reducing elements and oxidizing elements, which means, you know, taking away electrons and adding electrons, what's also called redox cycling. That's what really runs our body, is redox cycling. It's a very simple patty cake, and that's how electrons move in our body. Well, when that recycling doesn't go well, as you very aptly expressed in the opening volley, it creates what's called redox cycling pathology. And there is no disease process. It's just a spectrum disorder of the redox cycling pathology that affects the ability to create energy in clear exhaust. Everything stems from that. And it's just getting people to center on that and realize that once we get the body able to do those two core functions, well, then everything begins to hum, if you will. And one of the things that I'm really focusing on is trying to understand where did the train go off the track? Because it's, you know, we're talking about some really smart people around the world over decades that have, you know, the thought process has evolved to a point where we basically understand it backwards, and we've lost our true north about what really drives the physiology of the body. Again, back to that create energy, clear exhaust. And the best I can piece it together is the breaking point was in 1925. And it was an intellectual debate between Otto Warburg, who was a world-renowned scientist and clinician from Germany, and a guy named David Kylan, who was also world-renowned biochemist at Cambridge University. And they were both obsessed with the process of cellular respiration. And in 1925, they were delivering breakthrough thinking about how our cells, in fact, work with oxygen. That's what cellular respiration means. How do we work with this oxygen that we turn into energy, to create energy? And the fascinating thing is, Dr. Warburg was focusing on iron and Dr. Kylan was focusing on copper. Well, guess who won the fight? Dr. Warburg. And he ended up getting, he was doing a lot of research with mitochondria, and he delivered a very important address in 1925 in New York City at the Rockefeller Institute. And thank God it was done in America, because it was in English, so I could actually read it. But what he focused on revealed where the problem was. And the talk was about what he referred to as the respiratory ferment, which is this process of again, cellular respiration. And he was talking about that iron was the oxygen-carrying agent of the respiratory ferment. And that's what he got the Nobel Prize for, was identifying iron as the oxygen-carrying agent inside the mitochondria. But as you pointed out a few minutes ago, it's one thing to carry oxygen. It's something completely different to activate it and turn it and change it from being an O2 molecule into two molecules of water. And that requires a special process of what's called reduction to change that oxygen molecule into two molecules of water. Well, guess who was focusing on copper and how that happens inside complex four? That was David Kylan at Cambridge University. And the scientific world just blew past him because everybody was absolutely captivated by Warburg. And just so the listeners have a sense of the scorecard here, the score is Warburg 47 and Morley 18. What do those numbers represent? Warburg was nominated 47 times for the Nobel Prize and got it once. I was rejected by 18 medical schools. So I just want people to realize that, you know, there's a history here, but I think I've uncovered an important truth. And it wasn't until 1972 when Peter Mitchell got the Nobel Prize for his work in mitochondrial, it's called the oxidative phosphorylation of the mitochondria. And the title of his address, and this was about 9 years after David Kylan had died, the title was In Memory of David Kylan. He dedicated his talk to Dr. Kylan, who he thought was the most enlightened about how the mitochondria worked. So that's where I think the intellectual split was. And I think it's important for people to have a sense of how long-standing this confusion has been going on. And as you alluded to it, it's been at least 70 years. I would actually say it's been 90 years, almost a century of misunderstanding. And I don't have my tin hat on. I'm not going conspiratorial. There's just been a genuine misunderstanding about who's driving the train of respiration. And in fact, it's copper. So why is that so important? Well, There are a couple of things that I think would be fascinating for people to hear that have been actively preoccupying my mind of late. So the first is, we know that we've talked about this. We've talked about the protein ceruloplasmin, and when it's in its active state, it expresses this enzyme called ferrooxidase. So I finally came up with an analogy that I think will help people understand the unique qualities of the ceruloplasmin protein. Think of a decathlete, so an athlete who is so talented, they can excel in 10 different sports. They can sprint, they can run long distance, they can throw a javelin, they can do a high jump. I mean, they are amazing individuals in their ability to express their bodies so differently. Well, that's the ceruloplasmin protein. One of the events that it can compete in is called ferrooxidase. And that enzyme is what turns a very toxic form of iron into a very usable form of iron. So it goes from being ferrous iron to ferric iron. And when it's in the ferric state, it can be bound to other proteins. One of the most important transactions in the human body is that process of ferrous to ferric iron. And that's only one of the events that the ceruloplasm can do. It, one another event would be it can neutralize histamines. And in that state, the event that it's competing in is called histaminase. It's a very powerful enzyme, but it's the same protein, just expressing its ability in a different event. Another event is what's called the oxidation of biogenic amines. And you could go back to your medical school days when you were learning physiology, you probably remember that phrase, biogenic amines. What does it mean? That they bring good things to life. And if those amines don't get oxidized, they don't work. What are these amines? We're talking about the neurotransmitters. They don't work unless you have this same protein, ceruloplasm, expressing in another event called amine oxidation. So just, I think it's important for people to realize how incredibly important it is, but also how incredibly facile it is and talented across a wide spectrum. And I'm just hitting three of what I could easily go into a dozen different applications of that protein. So why am I bringing that up? Well, I think one of the most important times when this transaction is taking place is when a woman is pregnant. And that protein in the placenta, that same protein, we call it ceruloplasm when it's coming out of the liver, and we call it hephaestin when it's coming out of the intestine. Well, that same protein is called zyklopen, Z-Y-K-L-O-P-E-N, when it's being expressed in the mother's placenta. And that zyklopen is how the ferrooxidase enzyme is expressed and handles the transfer of iron between mom and the baby. So why am I dwelling on this? Well, have you ever measured zyklopen in any pregnant woman that you've had as a patient?
No, I don't believe I've even heard of it.
Except I'm not trying to pick on you. I don't. My daughter-in-law is an OBGYN up in Boston. I asked her the same question, and she looked at me like I had hit her between the eyes with a deer slug. It's like, she said, I've never heard of this. I said, well, I didn't think you had. And so I think it's important for people to realize that, in our world of dialogue, we recognize that this might be one of the most important enzymes in the human body, is that primal transfer of minerals between mother and child. And so this zyklopen is managing that transaction. But what's also happening is there's a download of copper between mom and the fetus, especially in the third trimester. And the baby is going to be getting 10 times more copper in their liver during that last 12 weeks of the pregnancy, or 13 weeks maybe. But that they will carry as an adult. And why do they need that? Because for the first 2 years of their life, they have no immune system. And what's even more fascinating is that they get a download of retinol from mom, who's breastfeeding the child, during the 18 months to 2 years that the baby is developing. Well, that's the magic combination of retinol and copper to make it bioavailable copper to drive the copper-based enzymes, not just for making energy, not just for clearing exhaust, but for our immune system. And those antioxidant enzymes that you mentioned earlier, that is the backbone of the immune system. It's an incredibly important part of the health of the baby. And the acetaminophen that you alluded to is throwing a wrench in those works. Absolutely messes up the liver of the baby. So I think that it's just bringing people, making them more aware of how important this particular enzyme is in the mother's placenta, to make people maybe start to question, well, maybe I should be focusing more on this these four pillars to make sure that I'm getting the minerals and the nutrients that I need, in addition to the peace, in addition to the movement, in addition to good food, real good food, to make sure that I'm in the best possible state that I can be in, so that my offspring can be in the best possible state that they can be in. I just think it comes down to the basics of that.
Yeah. Well, I agree 100%. Okay, we're up against a break, so we'll pause and come back with more with Morley Robbins on You're the Cure right here. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All righty. Here we are back again. Thanks for sticking with us. We've got Morley Robbins on First Monday with Morley today. So we kind of hit a big overarching summary in the first 30 minutes, which I think was awesome. One last point I want to make there that I guess I didn't really catch in our first year and a half. I knew for sure that acute stress depletes magnesium. The body just uses up, burns through the magnesium under acute stress. But chronic stress, this is the part I had kind of glazed over, causes the liver to start making metallothionein, which will bind up copper, this all-important copper that we're talking about, to make energy and clear exhaust and make ferrooxidase. I love that decathlete analogy. I'm definitely going to have to use that. All the different events that ferrooxidase needs to perform in, copper is needed in it. So chronic stress makes that copper go into a non-usable state, and therefore your decathlete just got put to the bench where he can't perform. Or if he's out there performing, he's doing it one-legged and one-armed. Chronic stress is killer. Now, obviously, the food's depleted. We've talked about that. The soil, poor farming techniques, which we're going to interview, I think, in a couple of shows from now, the author of the book, Dirt to Soil. It's a fascinating book. But we'll talk about on that show, but we've talked about it before. The minerals are just totally depleted because of modern farming and harvesting and food preparation techniques. So we're not getting the copper in our diet. We're not eating the organ meats. We're whole food vitamin C is not being taken. So we're not getting it, number one, but then we're under chronic stress. So whatever copper we do have, whatever copper did download from mama, it's bound up in a non-usable state when we're in chronic stress. So again, the perfect storm of this demineralization of the body. So,
and biologically, doesn't it make sense? If the organism is under constant stress, why would nature want that organism to survive?
Yeah,
I mean it's and I'm not trying to suggest that there's ill intent here, but just biologically, it does make sense. That the evolutionary of our being would suggest that if the organism is constantly being challenged, well then maybe we shouldn't be here. I don't know, I've tried to rationalize why it would do that, and that's the only way I could explain it.
Right. Well, to me, it's a marker for identifying where's this chronic stress, because I don't think I'm supposed to be living like this. I don't think I'm supposed to be feeling this poorly and living like this. So let me deal with that chronic stress and figure out what got me there, and let me figure out how to not be there anymore.
And I think the part that's missing, and again, I think your sensitivity and awareness of the soil is we didn't realize that the soil had become so depleted. I think we were completely unaware of that. And this process, I actually found, I think, the original reference that you've been looking for. It's two British, I think they were agricultural researchers. I'm not sure what their degrees were in, but they were both PhD scientists. But it was McCants and Widdowson, and the study was 1937. And that's when they first began to raise the alarm bells about minerals in the soil in the UK. And then their study has been replicated all the way up to the most recent that I know of is in 2008. And I think that's the series that you were referencing, in the very beginning of our dialogue, where there's been this wide-scale depletion of minerals, and especially copper, over an 80-year period. That's the those are the guys that, that actually did the original study.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And that just reminds me, in our recent past show, we talked about 90 milligrams of copper is all it takes to run all these enzymes in the body, which compared to iron, the surface area of a red blood cell where most of the iron in the body is, would be 9/10 of an acre, basically an acre of iron. Yeah. To a penny was worth 90 milligrams of copper. So even a,
isn't that amazing?
You just shave off a little bit of that penny even, and you're going to have some, you know, percent-wise, it may be 1-3% depletion of copper, but that's significant in the body when you take away copper.
And Dr. Ben, my fear is that that penny has been turned into a BB.
Yeah.
And for those of listeners who know the difference in the size between a penny and a BB, it's like that's the scary part, because the food system doesn't provide copper. And in fact, there are specific agents in our food system, like high fructose corn syrup, like the refining of food, like the farming agents, the herbicides that are used today, that are depleting copper from the food. And I think that's a very serious issue that people need to become more aware of, because yeah. it's absolutely vital, especially as it relates to our thinking and our brain function. And I thought that might be an interesting area for us to focus on, because I think a lot of people, we pride ourselves on being sentient beings, that we can think. You know, I think, therefore I am. I don't remember who said that, but it's a very important saying. And but we're losing that ability. Yeah. And one of the greatest conditions out there that is afflicting people across all strata of society is Alzheimer's, in Parkinson's, you know, Lou Gehrig's disease. The rate of Lou Gehrig's disease, what I didn't realize is that it's particularly high in people who've been taking statins.
Yeah.
Well, that's not good. Well, what causes Lou Gehrig's disease? Well, we're back to an enzyme. It's called copper zinc SOD. What's it getting rid of? The superoxide radical. What is superoxide? It's the oxygen molecule that has an extra electron. When does that surface? It surfaces in the mitochondria at complex 3 when complex 4 can't do its job. And so superoxide has been given off. It's supposed to be neutralized ideally in the mitochondria with another form of it called manganese SOD, but there's also this copper form in the mitochondria and in the cell and outside of the cell. And if it can't neutralize that superoxide, we get Lou Gehrig's disease. That's a serious problem. And one of the things that I've been studying is, so how does copper actually get inside our cells? It's, you know, it's like we just sort of assume that it just goes there, right? Well, it's actually a lot simpler than I realized, but it's also very vulnerable to problems. So when you picture that, go back to high school biology class, and you've got that kind of the cell that we were all introduced in our biology textbooks, that big kind of a square looking cell. There's a doorway for copper, and it's called CTR1. Copper transport protein 1, CTR1, and that's the doorway that lets copper inside the cell. Very, very important doorway. And when the copper does get inside the cell, there's a greeter. And that greeter is called glutathione. Now, it's always fascinated me about why people have referred to glutathione as an antioxidant. I knew that the glutathione peroxidase was the enzyme, but glutathione is not an enzyme, but it's considered an antioxidant. Why? Because it loads up copper. It takes unbound copper that's coming into the cell, and it makes sure that it's not allowed to cause any ruckus inside the cell. And so people who are familiar with glutathione know that it's very abundant, or it's supposed to be abundant, inside our cell. And so they refer to it as the master antioxidant. Well, it's the most prevalent, but if in fact we're back to that ceruloplasmin and ferrooxidase, that's the real master because of its ability to be a decathlete. Glutathione has very specific function. And yes, there needs to be plenty of it. And that greeter, that copper greeter, is what then passes it off to what are called chaperones. It's like we're at a high school dance, right? So we've got the greeter taking it to the chaperones, and there's three principal chaperones. One takes the copper to the mitochondria, another that takes the copper to this superoxide dismutase, very important connection between copper, and a third that takes it to what are called, it's called the secretory pathway. It's kind of this mysterious part of our cell where proteins and enzymes are being made, and they need copper in order to do it. Well, again, back to your classroom days, you remember Menke's disease and Wilson's disease. These are two of the first genetic diseases that were identified in human beings. Well, there's two enzymes involved. One is called ATP7A. That's the Menke's version. And there's ATP7B. That's the Wilson's version. And what are those enzymes supposed to be doing? Moving copper. And the 7A is down in our gut, supposed to get it into circulation so it can get around our body and be used. And 7B is in our liver, making sure that they can be put into critical enzymes like what you and I have been talking about, like the ceruloplasmin needs the copper. The amine oxidase that I was referring to a few minutes ago needs copper. And there are a handful of enzymes that rely on that 7B form. But if those proteins that are making the enzymes get tweaked from excess unbound iron, they don't work right. And so this machinery of how the cell allows copper in, greets it, gets it to the chaperones, then from the chaperones gets it to the proteins so that they can get activated and become enzymes, that's some of the most critical functions in the body. Again, it's easily overlooked because we're talking about a penny's worth of copper in this near acre of iron. All the focus is on the iron, as we've talked about. And then when it comes to brain function, just about everybody knows about neurons. You know, my younger son, Tom, who just happens to have a PhD in biochemistry from Stanford, pretty smart chimp, obviously takes after his mom. And he loves to tease us about chickens have three neurons. They have a pecking neuron, they have a squawking neuron, and they have an egg-laying neuron. He said they are among the dumbest creatures on the planet. I'm like, yeah, but they're really good for you. And he has no comeback to that. But again, we know about neurons. But how many people know about astrocytes? Say what? What did he just say? So think of Houston Astros, astrocytes. And just to give you a sense of how the universe plays with me, I started learning about astrocytes when I met a complete stranger at a local farmer's market. His name is Wayne. And he was worried about getting Alzheimer's disease. And I was explaining to him what we're talking about. And then I realized he was originally from Houston. And he was wearing his Houston Astros baseball cap, but it was a special baseball cap because the thread that spelled out Astros was copper-colored. And I thought, oh, the universe has a great sense of humor. So then I began to realize, as I started to dig, oh, it turns out that the astrocytes, these are the workhorses in our brain that are recycling cholesterol. They're breaking down glutamate so it doesn't become toxic. They're managing glucose. They're regulating iron. They're doing all the heavy lifting so that the neuron can peck and squawk and lay eggs. And it's like, it's amazing that we know about the neuron, but we don't know anything about the workhorse. And why is that cholesterol thing so important? Because the cholesterol needs to be recycled so that the myelin sheath can be constantly remade to cover up the nerve endings in the brain so they don't fritz out. And so, you know, this whole process of Alzheimer's, it's affecting a specific area of the brain called the hippocampus. Well, that's where memory's stored. And we're in memory, I think we may have talked about this, but just to reinforce it, memory requires magnesium in order to store it. It's like a filing cabinet. And if you don't have magnesium, you can't open up that filing cabinet. Well, the hippocampus is a copper-rich part of the brain. And it needs this copper to make energy and keep oxidative stress at bay. Again, back to create energy, clear exhaust. But if the brain is being constantly exposed to rising iron levels as we age, and that's a proven fact. In fact, I just found a study to show it with MRI images. It's a known fact that as we age, iron accumulates in our brain, and it shows up on MRI scans like light bulbs on a Christmas tree. And that begins to affect the copper bioavailability in the hippocampus, which then causes serotonin, which is being made in that part of the brain, to fritz out, and then we have memory loss. Well, that's Alzheimer's. We've talked about Lou Gehrig's disease. When that copper zinc SOD gets tweaked because the central nervous system relies on copper. Copper is regulating the oxidative stress in the central nervous system. And when it gets out of kilter, then it starts to create the symptoms of Lou Gehrig's disease. Parkinson's. There's another section of the brain, down in the brainstem. There's two parts of the brain, one called the substantia nigra. So substantia would mean it must be important, substantial. And nigra means black. What makes it black? It's called melanin, which is a very important pigment in our skin, as people know. And what's important to realize is that as you go higher up the evolutionary chain, there's more melanin in the brainstem. And you and I have 12 dots of melanin, and a chimpanzee only has 11. That's what's that's one of the distinguishing features between the species. So this melanin plays a really important role in the substantia nigra, but you can only make melanin when you have whole food vitamin C that has the tyrosinase enzyme to enable it to be produced. Well, what's on the outside of the substantia nigra? It's called the red nucleus. And there's, so if we look at the brainstem, there's a substantia nigra on either side. And on either side of that is the red nuclei in the brain. Well, what's inside the red nuclei? Why is it red? It's red just for the same reason that soil is red. Too much iron. It's got a lot of iron there. And as we age, the iron accumulates in the substantia nigra. In the red nucleus. And if there isn't enough copper, another major copper center is the substantia nigra. If there isn't enough copper there to keep it in check, it starts to oxidize, starts to rust the dopamine. And when that happens, you get tremor disorders. And so, again, it's this dynamic of this balancing act between that 9/10 of an acre of iron and that penny of copper. And it's really, I mean, we're boiling it down to its very essence, but it isn't a whole lot more complicated than that when you begin to understand where these copper depots are in the body. The liver is copper depot number one. The brain is number two. The kidneys is number three. Well, where do people have a lot of their disease today? In those three areas, you know? And then the heart would be number four. And what I find fascinating is that Leslie Clavé, one of the world's authorities on copper, back in 2000, he published in a textbook that he wrote that there were 80 anatomical, chemical, and physiological defects in a heart that's missing copper, that's lacking bioavailable copper. And so this little penny of copper is pretty darn important inside our body. And I think what you and I are harnessing ourselves to is making sure that more and more people begin to recognize not just the importance of copper, but how easily overlooked it is and how easily overwhelmed it is by the conventional food system that doesn't seem to understand how delicate this balance of power is between copper and iron.
Right. Well, that's fascinating. And you're right on with the neurodegeneration, Alzheimer's in particular, of course, ALS, and we see a number of patients with ALS. These brain diseases that are already we're seeing an uptick, or more than an uptick, severe exponentially rising slope. But the predictions on Alzheimer's over the next 10 years, 15, 20 years, yeah.
Right.
If these predictions are accurate. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we've talked about autism before. But not just autism, ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, depression, anxiety, just mood disorders in the youth. When you look at both ends of the brain, a youthful brain and an aging brain, you're seeing extreme dysfunction and an escalation of that dysfunction. Again, my point is this isn't genetic. When you see such an extreme escalation, we can't just say, oh, well, it's my genes, nothing I can do about it. There's an environmental component to this that has caused this escalation of something you may be genetically predisposed to, but you've got to turn on all those bad genes, basically. So it's an environmental thing. It's a modern thing. It's a Western thing, an American thing in particular. And that's why we keep going back to these very basics, diet, lifestyle, four pillars type stuff, minerals in particular. So connecting those dots is
it really is. And one of the things that I'm kind of honing in on now is that understanding the difference between the gene function that's supposed to make the protein that's supposed to then become an enzyme. And you know, a lot of people are being trained, like circus bears, to believe that their problems are genetic. Well, there is a genetic component to it, but why isn't the gene working right? Well, the what's staggering is to find out how many it's called the promoter region of the gene. That's where all the action takes place. That's where it actually gets the translation actually takes place, or I guess it's transcription actually. But the thing is, that particular section of the gene really relies on a derivative of a vitamin A of retinol called RXR. It's the retinol X receptor, and it's the master regulatory receptor. So when we're talking about gene issues, people need to start thinking about, well, gee, I wonder if RXR would be involved in that. A classic example is the vitamin D receptor. VDR doesn't work without RXR. The bile receptor doesn't work without RXR. The thyroid receptor doesn't work without RXR. You know, there are some, the estrogen receptor doesn't work without RXR. You know, and so there are about a dozen nuclear receptors that just don't work right unless that RXR thing is there. Well, that's on the gene side. Well, then on the enzyme side, it's the mineral. That's where the minerals are so important, especially this catalyst called copper. And what I've come to realize is that you have to be very careful when you're asking Dr. Google about a question, because you might be asking about, for the example, ATP7A, which is that enzyme that's so important for absorbing copper in the gut. Well, if you have lowercase ATP7A, Dr. Google knows you're talking about the enzyme. But if you put it in as ATP7A all caps, it thinks you're talking about the gene, and it does not compute when you put copper in it. But when you talk about this, the enzyme, you get a completely different response. So that's where I think the search engines are very finely tuned to, what are you really trying to do here? What are you really looking for? And this has just been the last couple of weeks that I've come to realize that I've got to be very careful. And the catchphrase that I'm now using to uncover treasure trove after treasure trove is copper dishomeostasis. That's a mouthful, but that's the phrase that opens up the Pandora of research that's been done, especially about neurodegeneration. That's the phrase that the leading brain scientists are using to describe why the brain is not working, why the astrocytes are not working, why the recycling that needs to take place in the brain is not working, and it's because there's dishomeostasis in copper, and it's fascinating, and that's where the real rich insights are emerging in the research now.
Awesome. Well, we're about out of time. I think obviously this last half of the show, everyone's getting the picture. Copper's really, really important. Bioavailable copper is really, really important. And at this, at the very end, I just want to clarify this RXR receptor. Folks, we're talking about inside the nucleus at the gene level, the DNA. That's the instruction manual, basically. The RXR receptor, retinol-based receptor, remember retinol is the vitamin A from an animal-based source, so pasture-raised eggs, beef liver, those are your primary ones. Cod liver oil is where you're getting retinol from. And this RXR receptor, retinol-based receptor, is needed to express all the right information off your gene. If you have dysfunction of that reading part of, you know, we've got to read what these instruction manuals say. And to allow your body to be able to read it, you've got to have this RXR receptor on there appropriately. So retinol is very important, is the point of that. Retinol from the diet. Obviously, copper, we get that. Food-based copper. Don't go to the supplement store and just get elemental copper. You need food-based, which is found in organ meats like beef liver and whole food vitamin C and bee pollen. Those are your top sources for copper. And then you have to not be under chronic stress so you don't bind up that copper in a non-usable state. Okay, well, fascinating stuff, Morley. We really appreciate your insights on especially the neurodegeneration. Folks don't need to be scared of this epidemic of neurodegenerative disease. You just need to be informed, educated, then you got to go implement and do the things that need to be done. And that's the whole point of the root cause protocol that Morley's come up with, is to help balance all these minerals the right way. Morley, thank you. Well, where can people find you, or any closing comments?
Yeah, well, first of just thank you for the opportunity to have these conversations. There are times when I just, like, there's so few people I can really have this kind of exchange with, so I really value the time we spend together. Best places to track me down are therootcauseprotocol.com, or the shortcut would be rcp123.org. Either one, and then of course I spend a lot of time on the Facebook, the Magnesium Advocacy Group. Those are the two best places to track me down. And again, we'll be having these conversations on a regular basis, so that'll be another opportunity for people to tune in and then start asking questions, because I think people should be asking questions about their understanding so that they can begin to simplify this process of getting back into balance. So yeah. I think that's an opportunity.
Yep. Well, it's complex, but doesn't have to be complicated. And for those of y'all who don't need all the research and all the connection of all the dots in the literature, then y'all can go play in the garden on first Mondays, I guess. But for those of us who appreciate a little more in-depth and have to connect the dots or need to go debate other folks, doctors or whoever, or educate other doctors, tune in every first Monday and we'll bring more of the evidence and more of the literature to you regarding these minerals and the root cause of inflammation-based disease, oxidative stress-based disease, which is what America is suffering from. So thanks, Morley. We'll be looking forward to our next visit.
Very good. Well, thanks again for the opportunity. And you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.